It's time for Windows Weekly, and wow, there is a lot, believe it or not, at the end of the year, a lot of news. Microsoft completely changing the way Edge works. Windows 10 19H1 is coming soon. A new Snapdragon just for Windows. And, oh my goodness, could it be a big update for Notepad? It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 599, recorded Wednesday, December 12th, 2018, inside Clippy. Windows Weekly is brought to you by LastPass. Secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 43,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at LastPass.com/TWiT. And by Molecule. Molecule is the world's first molecular air purifier that reduces symptoms for allergy and asthma sufferers. For $75 off your first order, visit Molecule.com and use the promo code TWIT75. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from the Microsoft arena. Sometimes we call it the Chris Capicella show. Is he coming on later?
Now it's the Dunkin' Donuts arena, Leo. Get with the program.
The Dunkin'. Did they rename it the Dunkin' arena? Did they take the donuts out?
There is Providence has a Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, and I'm wondering.
Center or something.
Yeah. Which is a great place to go. The whole place smells like donuts the whole time.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yep, that's the point.
It is episode 599. We're in a race to get to episode 600 before the year ends.
Nice. We're going to make it.
Next week.
Are we off like the week of Christmas and New Year's? Is that how this works?
Yeah, I think so. We have a best of on the 26th, Boxing Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know. I think Alex probably knows, but I would bet that we're here January 2nd, unless you really don't want to.
We'll just have to make some things up to talk about.
Won't be anything to say. Well, you could do your look ahead or
your
best
predictions.
Of.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, it can be a very short show if you want. I'm not.
Looking at
you never know.
18 minutes.
A lot could happen. Who knows?
That's true. This past week was actually kind of nuts.
It was.
See?
Leo, while you were gone.
Yes, by the way, thanks to Megan for filling in for me last week.
She did a great job. Yeah.
But I'm back.
While you were gone and after Megan was here, stuff happened.
Really?
Yep.
Well, let's get right down to it. What's going on? That's Paul Thurrott, by the way, on your left. I should pan you left. Let me set the settings here. I'll pan Paul left. We're going to make him be in the left channel. Okay.
Oh, you're actually going to pan me. You mean in an audio sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought, why not?
If you're
do
wondering
this?
What that little voice in your ear is, say, do it. Do it. It's me.
And I'm going to pan. Uh-oh. I can't get out. What did I do? Oh, crap. Oh, there we go. And I'm going to pan
you
Mary
can't get
Jo.
Mary Jo out of the middle.
Right.
I'm always in the middle.
Now, for those of you in stereo.
Yeah, sorry.
Paul Thurrott on the left, Mary Jo on the
look
right.
Look at me.
Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, oddly enough. He's also publishes the Field Guide to Windows 10, among other fine volumes of fiction, at leanpub.com.
Right. Actually, at this point, they're pretty much just historical docudramas.
Yeah. Mary Jo Foley writes regularly about Microsoft on ZDNet. Easy to find her blog, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Let me ask the chat room, can you hear the stereo separation, or should I make it more extreme?
We're very also, extreme people, so.
Yeah, is it awesome or is it annoying?
No, it's awesome. I didn't go, like, all the way to the left.
So it's not like the first Van Halen album.
No.
like when they had really terrible, you know, like, let's just put the guitar over there.
Should pan Paul a little more to the left.
Yeah. Mary Jo quietly asked for some more separation.
Could you separate us as far apart?
We actually have different monitors on different sides of the room.
No?
This is what happened.
Karsten doesn't like
McCartney.
It. Are you deaf in one ear? It bugs him.
No.
It's not bugging me, but I can imagine if you're at a...
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a ringing sound in my left. I don't know what it is.
Anyway, the peanut gallery has all weighed in now.
I'm going to guess and say opinions are all over the map. Opinions
vary. Yes.
I guess what I'm going to do is turn it down. Maybe I turned it up too much and made it be extreme. So I'm just going to do it a slight, but then it'll feel like we're sitting around a table.
Sure. Yeah. We are. Like a virtual table.
Those 3D audiobooks, like they would have a...
Yeah.
Like a fly would buzz around in a circle and you would hear it.
And then I'm going to put Brad Sams. I don't know where he's going to.
Speaking of flies buzzing.
So, you said things happened while I was gone?
Yeah.
What?
Well, the biggest one was rumors were correct. Microsoft Edge is going to become a Chromium-based browser.
That was huge.
Right.
Or huge, as the case may be.
Huge.
That was huge.
It was huge, you guys.
So is that Microsoft throwing... You didn't talk about this last week. This happened after the show, right?
So we talked about the rumors about it,
well, they confirmed
but
it.
Not the actual happening, which was the day after Windows Weekly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it thrown in the towel? I guess it is. They even said it kind of is. We give up.
Yeah. It is.
Well, but it is, but I think to the right cause, right? This isn't, we made this product nobody used and we're not going to make it anymore. It's, you know, maybe this isn't the right place to innovate on the web with a rendering engine. And this is a thing that people still are kind of arguing about. But, you know, the way we had described it last week was that, you know, Microsoft, like any other browser maker, can innovate at the application level, which is, I think, the appropriate place to do it, not at the web standards level.
Well, and that's one argument for this, is this is good for PWAs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Electron apps. And
And they own GitHub, which created Electron, and so now that means Electron. But somebody said yesterday, I thought this was interesting, as the Chromium engine is a forked version of WebKit. It's called Blink.
Right.
Why not choose WebKit? Then you would be, because WebKit's on iOS, WebKit's on Mac.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, Chrome used to be WebKit till they forked it not so long ago. Mm-hmm.
I think they wanted to go with the standard, the de facto
here's
standard.
Here's what I don't like about that. And this is funny, but it's true. It makes it a monoculture.
It does.
It gives Google more power.
But again, I think that's where the monoculture needs to be, right? We're not all using the same application,
right?
Although 2/3 of people on the web are using Chrome. We're using the rendering engine and the JavaScript engine, the other things that make up Chromium. But I think that's the right place for that to be, you know, because calling it a monoculture, you know, is has this negative connotation to it, right? It's like the
bananas.
Word bias. Not like bananas, unless you don't like bananas.
Well, bananas are a monoculture, and that means disease can wipe them out.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. It's a negative.
That's the negative connotation. But I think that's true in a browser in a sense, right? Because that means any exploit of Chromium will be now even more broadly spread.
But any standard is a monoculture. That's the positive way to look at it is this is a standard.
It's a standard.
So, the problem, you know, Leo's familiar with
it. It's not
all
a standard set by the W3C. It's a standard set by a corporation. Or
it's
is it? Because it's open.
Standard. It is open source.
Yeah.
Open source. Yeah. Technically, Microsoft could fork Chromium.
Right.
But that would kind of defeat the purpose in a way of going to Chromium.
By the way, if that happens and something went horribly wrong.
Exactly.
So Chromium is the open source project upon which Chrome is based.
Correct. Yeah. And a lot of other browsers, not just
anything
Chrome.
With Electron is based. And if you use Linux, you can download Chrome, but you can also download Chromium as a browser itself.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think you can get Chromium on Windows.
I presume you can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between Chrome and Chromium?
Google tracking, probably.
Chromium does the tracking too.
Adobe... what's in there? Something from Adobe is in Chrome that's not in Chromium.
Oh, patent encumbered stuff might be in Chrome.
Yeah. There are differences between the two. But I agree with Paul on this, that I think they had to throw in the towel because developers weren't testing for edge because it wasn't based on Chromium. And the result was there were many JavaScript heavy pages and sites that wouldn't work correctly and sometimes almost at all in Edge.
It's also
I was just going to say, what good's a browser, even if it's the most standards compliant browser, if people don't use it?
And it's a lot of effort and money and resources directed at something that the end user never benefits from unless you do it perfectly. And then they don't notice. It's a terrible thing to have to work on if it's unnecessary. And I know, for Microsoft, because there's a mentality there that they make things and we've always done it this way. And this is not the right place for them to be expending effort. And it's easier for developers if there's a single or at least a couple of targets to hit rather than dozens, which, like Mary Jo said, they're not doing anyway because Edge has 3 or 4% usage share. So why bother?
But
the other thing, Leo, did you hear? You probably heard this. They're also bringing Edge as part of this to Windows 7, 8.1 and the Mac.
Which it's already on iOS and Android, but now it'll be on Macintosh too.
There's also a small hint it might even come to Linux, which is kind of crazy. They never said that, but yeah, because if you look at the way they worded it, they said we're going to bring it to other platforms too, like Mac OS. It's a subtle hint, I know, and I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, but it's a possibility. I think there is a market, especially in this space and time, for a version of Google Chrome that has the Google stuff removed, and that's something Microsoft could do. I know Opera does it. Brave is a really small company. They do it. There are other companies, I'm sure, they're based their browsers on Chromium.
There's, of course, all these Electron apps as well. Which are basically a Chromium built into an app to provide. So the app is JavaScript and HTML. What happens to Edge? I use Edge as my default PDF reader in Windows. What happens to that? Because Chromium does not have those. That's one of the proprietary things I think that Google might add, but Chromium doesn't have. I guess Microsoft could keep its renderer.
So they're not keeping the rendering engine in the browser. They're actually keeping Edge HTML and the Chakra JavaScript engine for apps, but they're not keeping them for the browser. So they're not completely just killing them. But they also hinted that they're going to take some things from the current version of Edge and make them, or at least try to get them adopted as part of Chromium. Right. And then they can also add their own Chrome with the small c on top of Chromium.
That's what you do if you're a good open source user is you contribute back, and Microsoft said they are going to do that. So that means now both Google and Microsoft will be contributing back to the Chromium project.
And I think this is the key. This is the key thing. And for the people who are afraid of what this means in a negative way for Microsoft or Edge, I would just say there's no reason that the version of Edge based on Chrome can't look and work exactly like the one we have today. So if you're worried about that stuff, I'm not saying it will happen, but it's likely it will just for continuity purposes. I'm not saying anyone is, but
There are some features in Edge people like you just mentioned, the PDF reader.
PDF reader is a big one,
No, but there's no reason that can't happen. And so what's going to be interesting is the division between what they can or will add back to Chromium, which will benefit all browser makers who use Chromium, and then what they use on Edge specifically, which will be their differentiators, the things that make Edge Edge, And so we don't know what that line is. So you asked about PDF, for example. It's unlikely that will be added back to Chromium, but it's a certainty they'll add it to Edge.
Right. The only thing negative I can see at all is this notion that it's more of a monoculture. But there's still it does kind of box Apple in, because Apple is using its own platform.
Right.
So and if they there have is to a make... standard, a de facto standard, they're not part of it.
Mm-hmm. And they, by the way, Firefox, which I mentioned in the notes, is another issue, because they're the other major browser maker that has a years-long effort to create their own rendering engine. They've done various things to make it standards compliant, whatever. But I actually think both of those companies are going to have to eventually come around to the notion that they need to be on Chromium. And I know that's a big negative sticking point for a lot of people, but the rationale behind that is that for the same reason it doesn't make a ton of sense for Microsoft. Mm-hmm. It's not really going to make a ton of sense.
Yeah.
For them either. It's just the wrong place to innovate. And it creates confusion and difficulty in work for developers.
Right.
Because if those are the three now you have three things you have to worry about. It's like the old days, you know, this site best viewed on IE or whatever.
Oh God, mm-hmm. Remember that? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. This is what creates that, you know, and so. Yeah.
I have to think companies that make Chrome extensions are going to be thrilled. They don't have to.
Yes.
Although Chrome extensions kind of worked on Edge in the past anyway, right?
But for users, it's a big deal. How many extensions are on Edge today? Dozens at most?
Not that many, yeah.
How many are on Chrome?
Hundreds, thousands, well, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So actually, that is happening. It is probably a good thing as long as the standards bodies can, you know, kind of, you know, make sure that it maintains standards. I guess one single browser standard would probably be a good thing.
Well, I mean,
and they'll be more likely if there are flaws, which there will be. Everything has flaws to get fixed,
right?
Because everybody's using it and everybody's working on it and everybody's trying to keep it.
The other thing is this will benefit Windows, which I think might ultimately be the real point. Leo mentioned PWAs. I think that's a big deal. Mary Jo mentioned this notion that Edge HTML and the web view that developers use in apps today is going to continue, and that's true. But side by side with that, they're also going to offer this Chromium thing. So developers who, with less popular apps or apps that they don't want to update, can just leave it on Edge HTML. That will continue working. It's fine. But for people who want to move forward to the future or developers who are making new apps, especially new web apps, they're going to want to target Chromium now, not Edge HTML. And so those things will exist side by side. And I bet we see a big exodus, frankly, in any.
Well, now there's popular, momentum for sure.
Yeah. I just don't see any reason for any developer to hold back and stick with Edge HTML once this is implemented, you know, once it happens.
Yeah, there was one more good thing that came of all this, too, that Microsoft is decoupling the browser from the operating system because of this. And it's not going to become a store app, they told me, but they are going to be updating the browser much more frequently than they do the operating system. So instead of only getting Edge updated twice a year, you'll get it updated constantly, basically.
Yeah, what's Chromium's schedule? Is it once a month or once? I think it's once a month, roughly.
Is it?
You know, I think so. If it's not, it's within 2 months. It's a very quick
they
schedule.
They update a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have a schedule for updating, but they do update a lot.
Yeah, I don't think it's formal, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was a month to 6 weeks. It's very quick, and these things kind of bing, you know, they happen. And I'm curious what you guys think about this concept of bringing it to Windows 7 and 8.1, because Windows 7 in particular has about a year left in its supported life cycle. Why would you do this now? I mean, when Microsoft announced Windows 10, okay. Well, I was going to say they should have done this all along. So why do this now? Not why do this, but why do this now?
Well, so the Windows 7 support ends January 2020, but there are a ton of enterprises who are going to have the extended support contracts for at least three more years. So this is not just going to end in 2020. There's three more years that people will be using Windows 7 as a supported operating system.
Yeah,
and we're still only half of all users are still using Windows 10. Most are still using Windows 7 now.
Wow! If you go to the Chromium site, they have a calendar stretching into the end of next year for when they're going to do releases, all the way up through 79. They're subject to change, obviously, but do they have
dates associated with those releases?
Yeah.
What is the schedule?
So we're currently on 72. 73 comes out January 24th and March 7th for 74, April 18th, May 30th, July 25th, September 5th.
6 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's what they call branch points. Stable dates. Hello.
Hello.
The internet police are coming.
Are often shortly after or sometimes weeks after, but they also have stable dates. December 10th, 2019, we'll get 79. That's the estimated week of stable. So this is a pretty well organized open source project because it's really Google.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing I find interesting, and I don't know what this means at all, but Chrome OS is based on Chromium as well. There's Chromium OS.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means for Chromebooks. Maybe that rumor that Windows would run on Chromebooks, maybe that was a little confused. Maybe it's that Chromebooks will run on Windows.
Well, so there are these companies that make a Chrome OS you can apply to.
Yeah, they don't work very
any
well.
PC.
Yeah.
But those are probably based on Chromium OS.
They are. Right? They're based on Chromium
OS. The other question here, and this is not something Microsoft would ever talk about now because they've never even announced it, but this Windows Lite OS that Mary Jo has been talking about recently, how does this impact that? Because that's essentially a Chromebook competitor. It's basically Chrome OS, but with Edge, but now that Edge is Chromium, you know, it gets a little interesting. So, you know, we can only speculate, but that's interesting right there.
So what I've heard about that is, it's a little bit complicated, but so Lite, this thing Brad found out about Windows Lite is, we think it's Windows Core OS restricted. So almost like Windows 10 in S mode, except based on Windows Core OS, with a very different look and feel, in terms of the UI. Definitely meant to be a Chromebook, Chrome OS competitor, as is, you know, the possibility of this kind of a browser. So what I heard from somebody is there are all these different possible pieces that Microsoft has now that could be Chrome OS competitors. You've got this Centaurus thing they're developing as a dual screen device. You've got Lite, and then you've got this new Edge based on Chromium. And maybe you use all three together. Maybe you use two of those pieces together in some cases, maybe just one. So I think they're trying to kind of whip up all these different possibilities that could be Chromebook competitors, Chrome OS competitors in some combination or standalone. And I don't think they know yet what things they're going to pull together.
Well, and they have their experiences with Windows 10S and RT to kind of inform maybe what they do, because they, you know, I don't think they could sustain a third, you know, really bad thing. Did we talk about what was the impetus for this before? Did we, you know, in other words, why would Microsoft make this probably non-Windows branded Chrome OS style platform now? Did we already talk about this?
We talked about it in terms of a rumor last week, you know, just the idea of it being something as a Chromebook compete.
I wonder, I have to assume that Microsoft has heard from its business customers, from the enterprise, that there are certain things they really like about Chrome OS. They don't really want to go to Google, and they have this trusted relationship with Microsoft. They want to stay on the Microsoft stack. Could Microsoft do something like this, you know?
Yeah, like for first-line workers especially, right?
Yeah, and I think the RT and the 10S stuff was kind of their first very Windows-centric attempt to meet that need, and that finally now they're saying, okay, we get it. You know, we can't, this is not going to work. I always think back to that May event where they announced Surface Laptop, which was really an education event, and Terry Myerson was walking around with a USB key saying, look, see how easy it is to deploy Windows to these machines? And I'm thinking to myself, what, are you kidding me? I mean, even if you had 5 or 10 of them, you're going to go to a classroom of these things and plug USB keys and everywhere. It's ludicrous, right? So you almost need something more sophisticated. No, you don't almost. You literally need something more sophisticated that's simple and inexpensive and lightweight for those environments, right? And maybe they're finally heading in that direction.
What you also need is something not restricted to UWP and the store, right? So this new browser is not going to be a store app either, the new version of Edge. It's going to be a Win32 app, right, that you download from Microsoft's site, not go through the store. So I think that's a lot of, in many cases, why 10S failed was because you were restricted to the store. What if you had a restricted version of Windows that was a light version that wasn't restricted to store apps maybe, and it's restricted in some other way?
The other thing, it's also a chicken egg thing, right? Like what if Microsoft is trying to, or was trying to, evolve web apps on the platform in a way that would make sense and make up for some of the lacking that we see in the store. Now, this has not really happened. I have to think that part of what we're seeing today with Edge came out of that because developers and our people at Microsoft are like, look, we can't do this on our own platform, or it's going to take so long and be such a horrible thing to support. Plus, we only update the thing twice a year. You know, that moving to Chromium is what made the most sense. And then that kind of opens up the floodgates for web apps. And that maybe that does help them overcome the app gap that occurs in the store.
Could be. I don't know. I'm upbeat about the move. And I know there are a lot of people who have different objections, fear of Google, fear of monoculture. But you got to look at what was going on with Edge. They had like 3% market share. It was only going to go down. It wasn't going to go up as they stuck with their proprietary stuff.
Yeah.
also have to stop being such a hypocrite. I don't mean you, but I mean people who make these, like, I hate Google. I'll never trust Google. It's like, and you support Microsoft. Like, are you kidding me? Are you aware of the history of this company? you have to make this decision for yourself, obviously. And if you're going to go on moral grounds, God love you. But that's not necessarily a smart way to make technology decisions. Every business is a business, and they all have their own aims that have nothing to do with you. You have to go on capabilities and so forth. But Microsoft wasn't exactly a trustworthy company either. I love that they've turned it around, but that kind of proves that anyone could turn it around. So maybe Google could as well. But also there was this news this week, which we don't actually have in the show notes, that Microsoft is sending back telemetry data to itself from Windows 10, even when you turn it off.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, I'm not saying they're evil. They're not. But, I mean, they are a company.
Yeah.
It's kind of silly just to worry about that kind of stuff. If you're worried about your privacy, that's legit. But I just hate Google. You know,
how much cooperation with Google is there? I mean, you don't need to get Google's permission to fork or to include Chromium in anything. But and especially, I think the acquisition of GitHub must have somewhat informed this, since GitHub has some expertise because of Electron in working with Chromium. Is Google are they partnering with Google?
No. So here's the thing. This is something I think I can describe accurately because I talked to these guys. I've seen misreports about this. I have my own hopes and dreams that Google and Microsoft are going to skip through the prairie and be wonderful friends. But at a corporate level, no, there is no partnership at all.
No.
The Microsoft's blog post about this happening didn't mention the word Google even once, which is very interesting, but also speaks to that. The Edge team's later blog post, where they went into more of the technical details of what they were trying to do, did speak to Google a few times. Mm-hmm. But the Google they're talking about is a very small part of Google. It's the two or three guys who work in the standards group that are working on web apps and so forth. Those guys love each other. They get along great, but they don't represent Microsoft or Google. Right.
No, they're the guys who have been working with Microsoft to get Chromium to work on Windows on ARM, right? That's those people. It's not Google, the big G Google.
I don't actually think anyone from Google was working on that, actually. But
I think they were, but I think they were the Chromium Google guys. I don't think guys.
There's no big partnership going on, right? And at the end of if you look at the end of the Edge team's blog post, they say, we will be reaching out to Google in the coming days to see if we can't partner more on this stuff. And it's like, they haven't even spoken to them yet. Unfortunately, at a corporate level, there's nothing there. And that makes me sad. I wish that would change.
I'm not surprised by that not being the case. For once, Paul is more optimistic about something than me.
Listen, Edge is going open source, baby. Everything can change. No, I don't know. I have hopes. I mean, I'm trying to be realistic about it. But.
It's changed his whole perspective.
Yeah, I'm all upside now.
He's a new guy.
Wow, I should have done this years ago.
Yeah, take Twit open source, Leo. It's going to be great.
We use a lot of open source stuff. Actually, our whole back end is open source. Your podcast is produced with open source software, except for Premiere, Adobe Premiere.
But I just think there isn't. It's inevitable.
It is. You know, it's so funny that you're saying this, because I've been saying this for years.
Yeah, but now that I'm saying it, it makes sense.
Okay.
So, you're right. No, you have. You're absolutely right.
A lot of people, maybe this is a really radical point of view, who think the notion of proprietary software is almost over, that it's a bad idea.
Well, to be clear, we're not talking about software you pay for versus software you don't pay for or anything like that. I mean, one of the things that kind of came up out of this was...
It's free, not as in beer. Free as in Libre. Free as in...
You have to be pragmatic, you know. And
standards.
In the crazy aftermath of this announcement, somebody asked me, okay, given the fact that anything could happen now, you know, what's your pie in the sky? What could happen? Try to dream. Like, what could you predict? And the only thing I could come up with is, which probably can't happen for a million reasons, I get it. Why not just open source Windows? It's open source Windows. It doesn't eliminate the enterprise licensing stuff where they make all their money. That's all based on support anyway. You know, if you look at what they did, it's kind of goofy because these are relatively small things. But with WinPF, WPF. Yeah, WinPF. WPF, WinForms, WinUI, last week going open source, apply this model to Windows. It's not about making Windows available on the Mac or, you know, whatever that kind of stuff is. But more along the lines of getting a different kind of feedback about how Windows should change at a more technical level. You know, they have the Insider Program for enthusiasts, but this is a completely different way of, well, how do we develop this thing going forward? It's never going to happen, I know, but it's a possibility.
Alex Lindsay's been calling for open sourcing Mac OS for years, too. Mm-hmm. The truth is, if you think about it, you don't open source it if it's your crown jewel, but it's clear we're moving to a cloud-based world where OS
either one of these things is those
doesn't matter. In fact, what's the real OS? It's the browser.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It is, in a way. Right. Yep.
That's actually the embarrassment for Microsoft with Edge, you know, that the web browser is, for virtually everyone, the most popular application, the one they use the most often. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft somehow found a way to beat that power of the default. They put Edge in Windows and no one uses it, despite the fact that it's the default. I mean, you have to be really bad for that to not work out for you. You know, it's kind of interesting.
I mean, the reason I took 10S off, I got out of 10S mode on my Go was because I couldn't use Chrome.
Yeah. Interesting.
That was the reason. You know,
maybe this
the only
is
reason.
A Hail Mary to save Windows 10S.
Right? It could be the Hail Mary to save it if it reemerges as Windows Lite, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Microsoft has been looking for a Windows for the future that makes sense for a long time. You know?
Yeah.
They've understood that this kind of architectural nightmare they've created is, you know, a one Jenga piece away from collapsing on itself. And they've been trying to fix it, you know, and it's hard to get from here to there. But RT and 10S have been two of the attempts. We'll see if this Windows Lean thing is an attempt. But basing it on something that's standards and web, you know, would make more sense.
Yeah.
What was my thing about 10S? Remember, I'd say, look, I'll allow a little switch. Turn off S mode for a minute. Let me install Chrome and I'll turn it back on.
This is kind of like that in a way, right?
Yeah, that would work for like 90% of the normal people who use Windows. Yeah, that one change would have made all the difference. And actually, you're right. That's interesting.
The way I use Go, right, is I still am only using all store apps except for Chrome. That's the only one I'm not using.
You still use that Go? That thing.
I could do it. I could actually make that work. I mean, if I had Chrome, of course, I could install the web apps to the taskbar, which I like.
Yeah.
I use the store version of OneNote, the store version of Adobe Photoshop Elements. I could use the store version of Twitter, obviously. Mm. It's possible.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've actually stumbled on something interesting here through the back door. And of course, Microsoft's never going to make Windows open source because it's got too much proprietary code in it.
This is such an awesome idea. You know, you're right. Yeah.
No, but they don't need to, because when they said this is the last version of Windows, I think it's true. Mm-hmm. I think, honestly, moving to Chromium is really the step towards
post-Windows.
Yeah, post-Windows. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chrome OS is an operating system based on Chromium. Mm-hmm. You could have a Linux kernel or you could have a Windows kernel. That doesn't really matter. If everything's in the cloud and your user interface is actually dictated by your browser.
Mm-hmm. The amount of time that we've been running on an NT-based version of Windows is astonishing.
It is.
You know, it first released in 93, replaced Windows proper in 2001. It's that 17 years later. You know, the original version of DOS Windows was first released in 85, didn't become popular to 90. Nothing lasted 11 years. 10 years. We're almost double the time on NT now. And like I said, they've made attempts. Like, they see it. They understand, you know. But, of course, with Windows not being the center of the company anymore, you know, where do you go with this thing?
Well, and as a developer or as you know, anybody making apps, now you really have to start thinking. And this is so much better. And this is why you and I think, Paul, we're excited about progressive web apps. You don't develop for an operating system anymore. You develop for a platform, a browser platform.
A true cross. This is like the promise of Java, but actually happened. No, right once.
And what Microsoft does by making Edge Chromium is they make sure that it will have a true native experience on Windows machines.
Right.
Right. Yep.
See, the PWA thing is just like any other like web standard that you have to implement in a browser. You can see it out there. You know you have to do this thing, but then you have to do the work to make it look and work exactly like it does somewhere else. Or just take the somewhere else and put it in your system, and it just works the same. I mean, it really does make sense.
Well, there's the other thing we haven't talked about is in this Windows Lite rumored thing, there's talk about Windows Core OS. The way that Windows Core OS will run Win32 apps is virtually, either in a container, a VM, or even remotely from a server somewhere. Like that's part of the rumor of what this thing is. So if that happens, you've got PWAs on one hand, then you've got your any existing business apps that are Win32 that you're like, okay, what do I do with those? What if you could run those in a container or in a VM?
That gets interesting. I think this is the only way you can handle this legacy pass. You contain it. Mm-hmm. Literally, yeah. Let people still run it when they need to, you know, and try to push them toward new stuff wherever else is possible. You know, it's, I guess it's a little bit like Windows 10 on ARM. You know, it does emulation. It's only x86. Being able to run something a little slowly is better than not being able to run it. So that system in many ways is better than 10S, although I realize 10S also runs it. It's 10 on ARM, but whatever. You have to give people a way to move forward while retaining what's important to them. And I think that's where 10S has failed. It was just the door just slammed shut.
Yeah.
I am actually very excited.
Me too.
Now that we kind of framed it this way, I think we're seeing a peek into the future.
Yeah.
And
it is the future too, because the first developer previews of this aren't until sometime next year. So it's not going to be out anytime soon.
Do you imagine, as I do, as we're doing the show, thinking about Chris Cappicella running along listening? and then when we suddenly get around to this, which obviously this would be something they would be talking about in the executive meeting.
Sure.
He goes, yes. They figured it out.
I imagine it's a combination of, no, you idiots, that's not
right.
It.
Some of that.
Yes, they got it. You know,
basically,
sure we're not.
For us, Chris Cappicella is God. Looking over us, rooting us on, cheering us on, sad when we sin, happy when we choose the
path. You've just described
virtue.
A parent. We're like the little kids running around in a soccer field. We're just bumping into each other. But every once in a while, one of us scores a goal, and he can be proud of that.
Yes. We finally figured it out. Their evil strategy. But it's very clear now. I mean, this is what Nadella's been doing from day one. This is the – it's not like it's hidden. And it's – I mean, it's – you know, it doesn't – it took me a little while to understand it, but it's not that.
No, but that's the beautiful way to view that what's happening. This finally is – because we keep talking about this new culture at Microsoft, thanks to Satya Nadella. You can see all the parts of Microsoft, you know, starting with the – office for the iPad, literally when we first walked through the door. And this is it being applied to the stuff I care about, and I think Mary Jo cares about the most, in Windows. And it's hard not to wonder now, good, it's finally happening. So what's next?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Where else are they going to do this? Yeah. The possibilities are intoxicating, frankly. I mean, it's kind of, it's interesting.
No, I mean, we joked earlier about Windows and open source, but remember, I forget what the context was, but Mark Rusinovich actually said in a keynote somewhere, like, we could open source Windows. That was like a few years ago. And everybody's like, oh, he's just speaking hypothetically, or he's just saying that to be controversial. But now if he said that, people would be like, yeah, you could. You actually could.
So Windows is humongous, right?
Right.
I can only imagine the embarrassment of some of the source code in there that's 20-something years old.
True. That's true.
And I assume they'd have to go through, like, comb through it.
Clean
and
it
just
up.
Just clean it up. You know? Which, by the way, wouldn't be such a horrible thing for Windows, you know?
Right. I mean, the next thing we think they're going to open source are some of the legacy apps in Windows, right? Like, so we think Paint and maybe Notepad and other things like that are going to get open sourced.
I've heard that explicitly, yeah.
Yeah.
Because someone had said something like, oh, I heard, or Microsoft said maybe they were thinking about putting this stuff in the store. And I was like, yeah, maybe. I that sounds vaguely familiar. But I literally just heard they were going to open source that stuff.
Oh, yeah. It was you who said that. I'm like, somebody said that. Who said that?
Yeah. Yeah. Brad made a joke about it the other day, and I said, oh, actually, that is happening, didn't I? I guess I never mentioned it. I just heard about it, but that's what I've heard.
I mean, that wouldn't be shocking, right? I mean, it would be like, yeah, that makes sense. Where the way they're going, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I think we've decoded the mystery. The mystery of Microsoft.
Well, you know what? Seriously, this has been a tough year for people like us, right? Windows has not had a great year. Between the two feature updates and Terry and all, they're not on the senior leadership team anymore and blah, 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 whatever. You know, had this not happened, this would have been possibly the most negative year ever, but certainly since some of the Longhorn darkness, right? Actually, some of the Stephen Sanofsky stuff. You know what? Actually, this year didn't really rate, did it? Anyway, the point is...
there have been worse.
In hindsight.
We've had some ups and downs. But this was not a great year. And I feel like this thing, coming right at the end of the year like it did, kind of saved it a little bit, you know?
Boy, I really wondered how hard this was to push through. Like, did everybody just say, oh, of course... Or
I'm dying to hear what
it
was.
The Edge team must have gone kicking and screaming, obviously.
Right? Well, I think it had to have come from, I think it was the PW. I think that through some combination of things, they were like, guys, we can't do this the way we're doing it. It's just not going to work.
It may the writing's on the wall. You look at the metrics, it's going down. It's never, they're never getting any market share.
Yeah. Okay. My guess is it was the Office team who kind of, now that Office and Windows are working much closer together and they're under Rajesh Jha, who ran the Office team, I think they probably just said, look, guys, this isn't working out. You know, we have some UWP versions of some of the Office apps. They're not really all that well received. We need a different strategy here. Like, let's start talking about other things we could do, right?
I really wonder. Apple has never been a good a team player. And the right thing for them to do would be to do the same thing. But they're not going to do that, are they? No.
You know, Safari was probably the last thing Apple did where they still were talking about open source or whatever. Remember in the early days of Mac OS X, they used to really talk up that stuff. Yeah. And they were making contributions back to Darwin and blah, blah, blah. That ended silently. I don't remember when exactly. But Apple's not a good partner in any way. Apple actively seeks to eliminate every partner they have. Yeah. That's their strategy. Yeah. But I don't think you can swim against this tide.
Well, I think Edge, it's just a matter Edge of time. On Mac is going to be a reasonable choice. You'll have a choice between Chrome and Edge. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons people use Safari is because Chrome is notoriously a resource hog, especially battery on your laptop. If this is something, just a little tip to the Edge team, if you can make a lightweight, fast browser that doesn't kill battery life, that will be the choice.
So speaking of battery life, that's actually something Chrome has improved. I can't say to Mac, but on Windows it has. And with every version of Windows 10 that's come out, Microsoft has put a little video and said, look how much better battery life this thing gets than Chrome does. But over time, that thing, these numbers aren't exact, but it went from 57% better battery life to 35%. Last time it did, it was 14%.
Oh, well, there you go.
So when this version came out, I said, hey, did anyone notice that Edge never came out with a little video showing how much better the battery life was? I think it flipped.
Oh, that's. Mm-hmm. I'll have to look on the Mac side. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
The best thing is we'll no longer get these pop-ups when you use Chrome on Edge saying Edge is better, and when you go to a Google site in Edge, Chrome is better. Or maybe that won't stop.
Let's hope that means
we want to bring the platforms aligned, Leo. You know, I will say this: Microsoft Office is well regarded on the Mac for some reason.
It is.
I don't know why.
Apple has its own Office that's much more Mac-ish.
Yes,
it's just not used in any offices, which is part of the problem.
Mm. Yeah, but the one thing Microsoft has been pushing lately with Mac Office is how Mac-like it is. You know, they're kind of we're a good Mac citizen, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So they could throw that in there with Office and make it part of that effort, and there might be some benefit to that. You know?
Well, they have dark mode now in Microsoft Office.
Yes, they do.
For Mojave.
Yes, they do.
So there you go. The writing's on the wall. But you can't read it because it's so dark. But
it's all going edge. That's what this means.
We're all going edge.
We finally revealed our secret plan.
Yeah, the reason they said they brought Edge to the Mac, if you're wondering what they said, is because we know many people who develop software use Mac, and if you're a developer, we want to just make it easy for you to try something that in Edge against Edge. So if it's on the Mac, we hope you will just try it.
It's a really good point. Developers do seem to like Macintosh.
They do.
Unless they're doing, you know, .NET.
Right.
Right. Although .NET Core, it's on the Mac.
I know, .NET Core, Mac. Yeah. Yep.
Huh, that's interesting.
Another open source thing. And by the way, you know, .NET Core we don't talk about it a lot, and because it's kind of a dense developer topic. But remember that .NET as originally envisioned was the new app platform, essentially, the new platform that ran on top of Windows. It was in some ways one attempt at getting to the future of Windows. A lot of the things we've seen since, culminating with the store apps like UWP, are essentially .NET style or .NET based APIs and SDKs and so forth. Taking that thing, which was very Windows centric, and making it open source, runs on Linux and the Mac as well as Windows, is very, very interesting. And you know, not all of that stuff is, you know, cross-platform. Obviously, the WPF WinUI stuff is going to be Windows only.
Okay, here's a crazy thought. Well, I'd love to see what's really lacking on Chrome OS as a developer platform. Be really interesting to see if they could move Visual Studio Code to an Electron. It's not an Electron. It is an Electron app.
Actually, it is an Electron app.
That would be a breakthrough. And then that's how you beat Mac at Apple at this game. I mean, the reason developers use Apple is because it's a kind of a Unix command line, I think. That's why I use it.
Yes. Windows and, also has one.
Yeah, Linux subsystem from Windows is not the same. Nor is, frankly, Linux on Chrome OS, which people will, you know, also say.
But we have open SSH, Leo. Come on. What do you need?
Well, I do. Frankly, I SSH into my Linux server when I want to do that. But a better way would be a native app.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, .NET Core, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what comes out of that. It's interesting. It's just, it's interesting.
They should just give up on .NET. It's over.
Forget it, guys. Yeah. Sorry.
Give up on UWP. No. Give up on .NET. It's the world's changed. We're now all PWA.
Well, .NET Core, like, again, being cross-platform and .NET, what do you call it, ASP.NET Core, being available on other platforms is important because you could use those as the basis for web services and web apps and so forth.
Yep.
Interesting.
Everything's different.
Let's take a little tiny team out. Let's stop. And I will do an ad. And you will continue. How about that?
Sounds good. Fine.
Enjoy. Smoke them if you got them, Mary Jo. It is time to talk about our fine sponsor, which I think this is a company that is probably very excited about this, which is LastPass. LastPass makes, of course, a plugin for Edge as well as a Chrome plugin and a Safari plugin. And an app for Windows, and an app for Mac, and an app for iOS and Android. So it's everywhere. I even use LastPass on Linux. It's the password vault. That's actually the main reason I use. Well, there's several reasons. I'll tell you why I use LastPass. Then I'll tell you why you need to use LastPass. I use LastPass because I don't like passwords. Never have. I don't like remembering passwords. And the days are long gone when I used monkey123 as my password. I did use monkey123 as my password for many, many years, as I'm sure many of you have similar stories, because you don't, who can remember all these, who can remember them? Fortunately, about 10 years ago, I discovered LastPass as a secure, encrypted, and by the way, only decrypted on your device, so the LastPass folks can't see your passwords, encrypted password vault that generates long, strong, random passwords The password options are great in their password generator. It's built into LastPass. It's everywhere. You can choose alphabetic. You could choose numeric. You could choose punctuations. They even have easy to read, avoid ambiguous characters. I think they now call it easy to speak or easy to read. They have new phrases. But it's the same idea where you don't have ones and L's because that makes it confusing, right? Or O's and zeros. You can specify the length. And I always choose, by the way, you know, I always choose, I'm giving this away, odd lengths, weird lengths, like 17 or 22, not 12 or 24, any of the obvious lengths. Pick a weird length, make it just a little bit harder. And then the good news is you don't have to remember that. The little thing pops up and says, you want me to remember that for you? LastPass says, yeah, I'll remember that. And now not only does it remember it on the device I made that password, it remembers it everywhere. So I don't know any of my passwords, and I don't need to, and that's awesome. I just need to know the one password to unlock LastPass. Actually, if your business uses Active Directory, you can actually even forget that password. Use your Active Directory credentials, log into everything. That's sweet. So LastPass for me, and then there's lots of additional features. There's a security check. You can find sites that you used Monkey123 on and change that easily. There's a one button, change this password. Find passwords you've reused. We all do it. After the Marriott break-in, maybe we're thinking twice about that. It'll find all of those. The securities check will say, well, you got these 38 sites with the same password. You want to change them? And it'll do it. Boom, 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 boom. It's great. It's just awesome. And then you have all that. I trust LastPass so much, I don't just put passwords in there. This, to me, is my trusted vault for everything. My passport images when I travel. My driver's license, social security numbers, anything I need to keep track of. It's exactly what you need. It's the first app I install. When I get a new phone or a new computer, I sit down, I install LastPass because that facilitates the rest of it. Everything else, boom, 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 it just autofills. And by the way, iOS 12 now, autofill finally for LastPass. Apple didn't like that for a long time. Now it does it. Of course, Android has done it for some time. That's nice too because you open an app. Every time, like, let's say I'm going to put Instagram on my phone, which I don't. But if I were, I would say, okay, there's a button on iOS 12, password, fills it in, boom, done. It uses Face ID or Touch ID, so it's very easy to unlock the vault, and yet still it's secure. There's also lots of additional features inside LastPass, and Steve Gibson's really good at this. He explained this all when he interviewed the founder of LastPass, looked at the source code, things like PBKDF. The derivative function. You can say, I want that to be 50,000, which means brute force, virtually impossible. Rainbow tables doesn't work. If that's the kind of stuff that rings your chimes, you should listen to Security Now. And actually, there's a whole episode on LastPass where he talks about all of this. Now, that's why I use LastPass, but here's why we use it here at work and why your business ought to use it. LastPass Enterprise, because your employees are doing all sorts of terrible, no good, very bad things with passwords. They're putting them on post-it notes on the screen. Worse than that, they're sharing it not only with other employees, but with people at home. And right, you have to give your employees the keys to the kingdom. It's like you say, yeah, here's our bank account. Here's our server. Here's our databases. Sure, take it. It's all yours. When you have LastPass Enterprise, not only do they not get the password, they can't share the password. And if they leave, you can revoke access. You actually have over 100 policies in LastPass Enterprise. Things like setting the master password requirement, requiring two-factor, we do that. So every employee has to use two-factor, like it or not. By the way, the LastPass multi-factor authentication app is great because it's like the Microsoft one, which you can use, by the way. But it's nice because it pops up an approved deny. It doesn't make you type in a 6-digit code. I really like it. What else can I tell you? Data, as I said, is never decrypted except at the device level, so no one else has access to it. That's, I know people are really concerned. This is security is number one, job one at LastPass. We put every business piece of information in there. Oh, the shared folders are nice. So everybody in the business department can have a shared folder where they have access to all the resources and assets they need access to. But only the people in the business department get it. You know, our engineering team has a separate folder like that. We use that at home. Lisa and I have a family folder. So when I set up, you know, when we set up the electric bill, she gets the login and I get it. It's all automatic. It's all shared. 16 million people use LastPass. It's the number one most preferred password manager. It is mine, has been for 10 years. It's what we use at work. It's even a benefit of employee at Twit. Every employee gets LastPass Personal as well because we want them to secure their entire life. And they seem to like that. LastPass Premium for personal use, LastPass Families for the family, LastPass Teams for 50 or fewer people, and the LastPass Enterprise, which we use here. Take control of your business passwords. Reduce the threat of breach. Learn more at LastPass.com/twit. LastPass.com/twit. Make this be, you know, this will be the last year you use Monkey123 as a password. You're laughing, but I really did for
That's
years.
That's the password I use in my luggage.
It's, I think, the most, it's the most used. It's one, a monkey. For some reason, see, I thought, oh, I'm being clever. No one will use monkey. It always shows up at the very top of the list. I don't know why.
I can't even imagine why that's...
Why monkey? Of all things, yeah, right?
That's strange.
But there's something about monkeys we all... I don't know. Anyway, it's obviously this the first one of the first things bad guys try. All right, on we go with the show. I'm glad you spent some time with the Edge thing, because actually I think that turns out to be strategically... A very interesting insight into what
I'm actually. I'm glad that both of you guys are on board with this. Yeah. I think this is the smartest thing they've done in a long time.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Yep.
19H1, the new version of Windows 10. Something in the chat room said, because I said Microsoft said they'll not. This is the last version of Windows. They said no. They didn't really say that. Did they? Did say that though? Right?
Yeah, they did.
Oh yeah.
I'm not making that up.
No, that's true.
They didn't mean it like Windows. We're releasing Windows 10 in July, and this is the end. They
update. I mean,
we're
going to
keep.
Yeah,
we're updating.
But they're not charging people for it. You get the updates automatically. As soon as you get to 10, you're done.
Leo, to be clear, there is a payment, and it has something to do with your soul. But there's
you're right.
There are things in Windows. Trust me, you pay for it.
Yeah. What are we seeing? I guess a new version of 19H1 is their code name for the next version, right? What was that? Redstone 5?
It was supposed to be Redstone 6.
6, but now it's 19H1. Yeah. Okay.
Right. So this week on Monday, which is unusual for a day to drop an insider build, Microsoft released the latest 19H1 test build to Fast Ring. It's 18298. And the most important thing.
You know why we're letting
Mary
Jo do this? You're going
to
find out.
Guys, it's full of notepad features. I'm not even making this up.
Paul says, for some reason, in his show notes.
I know. And I'm like, wait, for some reason.
This is the Mary Jo update.
That everyone's joking. You should call this Mary Jo Foley update. I'm like, well, if you need someone to use as your spokesmodel. I'm here.
Now, I read Peter Bright's article about, maybe it was yours. I read the article about all the new features, and some of them are kind of like line endings. I mean, come on, really?
Well, I mean, what they're trying to do is make Notepad more appealing to developers, because a lot of developers use Notepad.
Really?
I mean, not just people like me, but
Why wouldn't you use Visual Studio?
I know. Or
code completion and
Visual Studio Code, Visual Studio.
Code. I actually really like code.
Yeah. But some people do use Notepad and for developer. I use it to write, as everyone knows. So a lot of these features don't matter a whole lot to me, but they matter more to developers. So Feedback Hub integration's built into Notepad now. So if you have something you want to tell Microsoft about Notepad, it's really easy to go straight to Feedback Hub from inside the app and give them your feedback. This is an interesting one. Notepad now shows an asterisk in the title bar of any document that hasn't been saved.
I know that's like so basic, so fundamental.
I know. Finally. They didn't have it.
No, guys, come on. Both those things you just described, are they going to put those in every other application that comes with Windows, or are they just in Notepad for some reason?
How about just
auto-saving? Could we,
we
have an auto-save option?
I know. So they've talked about autosave. I've seen people say the one thing I want in Notepad is autosave, and so far it's not there still. So I don't know if they're going to add that.
I think Notepad's the last refuge from autosave.
It kind of is.
It's for those who want to come out from under the foot of autosave.
free at last.
Hasn't been updated since Windows Vista. Well, actually, that's not true.
No, there's other things about. Open and saving files with a path longer than 260 characters, UTF-8 encoding. I don't know what those things are, but I'm sure some people do and they care a lot.
People who have titles for their files that are very long, like this run-on sentence, would like to see that, because then they can have their files be
really short
names.
Can we give a little credit to what Leo just did, by the way, with that giant run-on sentence, which is basically like a Unix command line thing that would be impossible.
It was a one-liner, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. But, the obfuscated code award winner.
It does beg the question, like, if somebody really cares about real features, why would they use Notepad? They'd use Notepad++ or something. I mean, there's so many good editors, you know.
Yep.
Steve Gibson still uses Brief. Remember Brief?
No.
No.
So it was a DOS editor.
But I've never heard of that.
A DOS editor.
DOS editor. He uses it in the DOS emulation mode.
That's why I write everything in the Borland Pascal editor. I just like it.
I love that. Oh, I love it. Yeah. Those were the days.
No, but, you know, I have a mixed feeling about whenever I see Notepad, new Notepad features, I'm like, guys, do not wreck Notepad. You don't need to do a lot to Notepad.
Leave it alone. Yeah.
It's good the way it is.
I just want to know why they're doing anything to it. I mean, at the exclusion of everything else in Windows. You know, it's goofy to me that they've like, there's a little menu item, like she said, where you can go, you know, provide some feedback for Notepad. And it goes right to that place in the feedback hub where the Notepad stuff is, because people using Notepad are too dumb to find it, I guess. But
Hey.
No, sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that. But what I really meant was, why in Notepad? Like, why wouldn't everything do that? Is that menu in Paint? Is it in Word?
The Notepad breed is a different animal.
It kind of is.
Honestly, Mary Jo's the only person I ever heard of who uses Notepad.
No, every time I say something about Notepad, it's like people come out of the woodwork to give the high five, the secret handshake about Notepad.
First of all, like, I was not in the woodwork when I alerted you to this.
You were not.
It's like there's a Balrog.
Paul put a tweet out and he's like, Mary Jo, there's so many Notepad features in today's build. And I was like, what? I know. Yeah.
Please highlight.
There were a couple other things.
In all caps, by the way.
There were a couple other things. They're improving the built-in touch keyboard. What else is there? Narrator fixes.
You can barely spit out the non-Notepad updates. You're like, I don't care what the other
stuff. Yeah. I was like, yeah, there's some Notepad, lots of Notepad stuff. And then they did a couple other tweaks with some Fluentty, blah, 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 whatever. Okay.
Yeah. Some other
anyway,
nonsense.
Yeah, there's some other features in there. Because they didn't do a build last week because they had something happen, I forget exactly what they said, something that prevented them from releasing a build. So this build has a lot more fixes and updates.
Probably
than
a Notepad-related screw-up of some kind.
Not even a Notepad-related screw-up, but yeah. Anyway, they continue on the path for 19H1, and the first bug bash for this thing is in January. So we're getting starting to become features.
This is closer than you're even kind of hinting at, because for much of December, they're not going to do anything.
Oh, you're right. Right, because of Christmas.
It's not like they're going to be building this over the
holidays. Because 1809 just barely came out.
I know. Well, that was
they're going to get one
fluke.
Of these. They got to get one done on time, Leo. They're going to do it, however, whatever it takes.
So this will be March,
around March, April, March RTM,
April anymore at Microsoft? Are we really?
The first half is anytime,
a little sensitive to
anytime
this.
Anytime before July,
it will be before the summer solstice. That's all we'll promise.
It doesn't even have to be before the summer solstice.
It doesn't.
That's true.
It could be June 28th.
Good.
It could be, you know, whatever. When it's ready.
When it's ready. That's the point. When it's done.
Yep.
I'm just basking in the glow of...
Of the Notepad.
Updated Notepad. So beautiful. Such a thing.
It's nice.
Oh, boy.
Microsoft 365 Insider Program. You can now get the latest builds of 365. Is that Office?
So, Microsoft 365 is Windows 10 Enterprise plus Office 365 Enterprise plus Intune, some of the Intune features bundled together, right? So it was only a matter of time before you saw them do something that they call Microsoft 365 Insiders. And what this is really is the successor to what they currently call Windows Insider for Business. So if you're a business customer and you are somebody who typically rolls out new Office builds and Windows builds, and you want to see how they work together, you would be a good candidate to be in the Microsoft 365 Insider program.
It's enterprise, though, right? It's enterprise only.
Enterprise.
Yeah.
Yep. Enterprise. Donna Sarkar and her team is going to work with the Office Insider team to run this. So if you're in, if you're somebody who's right now in Windows Insider for Business, you probably want to look at getting into this. There's already a sign-up page. You can get in there. I don't know what they're testing right now. If they've actually started testing, but it's there. Walking Cat was the one who found
this page. They really, though, always done this for IT departments and enterprise? I mean, isn't kind of this a informally always been the case or no?
You know, they've always encouraged IT departments to test things before they came out. You know, like, okay, set up a pilot ring.
Right.
Make sure you're testing this before it hits all your desktops. Yeah. but this is more of a formal way to look at
Makes
that.
Makes it easier to do it, I guess.
It does. Yeah. It does.
Okay.
Yep.
Very nice.
But this next thing.
What? 365 what? Consumer? What's that?
That makes sense. But what's this that? Next thing.
What's that all about?
Yeah, good question. So I thought they weren't going to do this, right? Like I thought Microsoft 365 was just a business thing. You know, they have a government version, a first line worker version, education version of Microsoft 365. But there's something called Microsoft 365 Consumer. I found it by accident when I was trolling around the Microsoft job site, as one does. And all of a sudden, I'm like, wait, what is this thing? And then I looked it up. I'm like, they're advertising multiple jobs for somebody to work on the Microsoft 365 Consumer team. So what is this thing? Good question. Like, what's in the bundle like this for consumers, a subscription bundle? There were hints in the job post that Skype would be part of it. Possibly Cortana, Bing, maybe the MSN apps and services. And if you want to make it parallel to what Microsoft 365 looks like, you would include Windows in there too, and Office 365, of course. Microsoft says they have nothing more to share about this right now. But I think it's going to be interesting to see what this is and what gets bundled. I mean, maybe it's something that is tied to Surface and you can only get this bundle if you buy Surface or somehow a leasing program is involved, you know, like it's, hey, you can get the subscription bundle and Surface as a leasing deal. There were just like a lot of hints around their new group that Yusuf Mehdi runs, which is modern life and devices. So that's Microsoft's plan to try to get consumers back and kind of, you know, get them to believe in the company again. And the kind of people they're targeting with this, they call professional consumers. So that's why there's no gaming in this bundle.
What's a professional consumer?
So a professional consumer is somebody.
Martha Stewart? What is that?
Someone who's like a Prime account.
It's like us, people who want to use technology to be more productive. It's not gamers. It's not people who don't know about technology. It's kind of like people who are willing to use technology integrated into their daily life to do things like planning and setting up small groups of family members. You know, like people who look at technology as, oh, that would make me more productive.
Our listeners, probably.
And yes, our listeners, probably. Yeah. Yep.
Prosumers.
So, prosumers, yeah.
I've always thought that a consumer version of Microsoft 365 would happen. And
you did?
The reason And if you look at it at a very simplistic level, just renaming Office 365 to Microsoft 365 would make some sense because of the brand and so forth. But when you think about the kind of consumer services you can add in addition to the ones that you found out about, some of the ones I would want to see in this would be Windows 10 Pro, because that gets you out of the hellscape of having to install every update as it comes down if you want that, which I think is super important. Mm-hmm. Getting rid of ads. You mentioned something about MSN apps and so forth.
Yep.
How about getting rid of the ads in Windows, right, across the board? I would pay for that. And then there's some integration possibilities, I think, with some of their gaming properties, like Xbox Live. I'm more speaking to what I think could be part of it, not that what is going to be part of it. Like, in other words, when you think about Microsoft for consumers, you know, Office 365 Home today is this no-brainer thing for families. Mm-hmm. Adding Xbox Live with, when you think about all the parental components that go there, I think, you know, like the family, Microsoft family capabilities falls right into that. and would be kind of neat. So
yeah,
I think it makes sense.
Yeah, they might do that. I mean, they already have a subscription program for Xbox, which is Xbox Game Pass, right? And they already have Office 365 Pro, home and personal, as you mentioned. The part they don't have is like a bundle of all the other stuff. Like they've dabbled with that before. Remember, I forget what they call those. We've written about them before. Yes.
That's right.
Like here's, you know, a Xbox Gaming Pass plus this for a
What was that thing called? Someone will remember this and who's watching the show.
So it might be like the next version of that in a way, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But sold as a subscription bundle.
Yeah.
And, you know, like not just a one time. We have a limited number of these things. Instead, it's every year.
Look at the cost of Office 365 Home today. It's about $100 a year.
Yep.
And it's not on sale. It gives you all the whatever the benefits are for Office and OneDrive storage and everything. If you threw in Windows 10 Pro for everyone who did that, even if you can't take it away, right? I mean, like you can't really downgrade someone from Pro to Home, hopefully. But that would be a neat way, even if someone paid for it for the 1 year and they were able to apply that to all of their PCs and then they went away from it for whatever reason, it would still be a huge benefit. You know?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's all I know. I've already had some people say to me, so does this mean Microsoft's not going to make Windows free anymore for home users? No, this is not what that means. Gordon Kelly from Forbes.
Microsoft revealed a nasty surprise for Windows.
This is more just like Microsoft 365, I believe. It's going to be an option. It's a subscription bundle option. It's not forcing everybody to be on the subscription bundle. So you decide if it makes sense for you.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, you couldn't force people to be honest. So, but yeah, Yeah, but
just
people
throwing the word of caution.
Well, but look at it as it's like any bundle. If you were going to buy some of this stuff anyway, and getting this is less expensive, and you get this other stuff, you know, that's the value. Right. So Office 365 by itself is already an incredible value. If you can add stuff to it and have it cost the same and not be that much more expensive, that may make sense to some people. Also, I would say on the corporate side, especially the way it was originally introduced, you could think of logically Microsoft 365 as being one or more premium tiers of Office 365 because it's a superset of what you get with Office 365.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's going to be – so when is that happening? Or is it just a rumor or is it real?
Oh, we just
they've got job posts. There are job postings in their job boards that make it seem like they're already on their way to building this. Well, on their way.
Hmm.
Right.
I know who knows. Chris Capasola knows.
We haven't seen him in a while. We really ought to get him back on the show.
It's been almost a year, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah. We need our Santa to come back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or in my case, my own personal Jesus. I'm joking.
The Depeche Mode song.
Yeah, it's a Depeche. Was it? Yeah, yeah. It was, wasn't it?
Or Depeche Mode?
Depeche Mode. Yeah. Or was it REM? I confuse those.
It wasn't REM.
It was Depeche Mode. Anyway. You're right. Yeah. Hardware time.
Oh, is there hardware news?
The Snapdragon 8CX.
Yeah. So last week, Qualcomm held their annual Snapdragon Summit in Hawaii. And both of us declined not to go, actually, because it takes 200. Well, I know
it's too far.
It's such a long flight.
Hawaii.
I know. I did it last year. It is one of those most magical places I've ever been. It was wonderful. But, you know, they stream their stuff and they gave us the information ahead of time, whatever. But they had a bunch of stuff around 5G, which is awesome. And the Snapdragon 855, which is for phones, also awesome. But I think the thing we should focus on today is the 8CX, which is their technically a second generation chipset developed specifically for PCs. It's the third Snapdragon chipset to appear in PCs, right? In these Windows 10.
So is this a thing that was called 1000 at one point, Snapdragon 1000? This is the same chip, right?
Yep.
It is.
And what they're promising, now these, we're not going to see these devices until the third quarter of next year. So we've got a ways to go here. But what they're promising is Core i5 level performance, which answers one of the two major problems with Windows 10 ARM, the other one being compatibility with 64-bit desktop apps. The platform already gets incredible battery life to 20 to 25 hours, depending on the system. Credible connectivity. Today it's gigabit plus LTE. Great standby times, et cetera. But the performance has been terrible. So, you know, first generation A35-based Windows 10 and ARM PCs were unusable, basically. They were terrible. But since then, they've announced the 850, which is based on the 845. It's for PCs. It's some minor, kind of modest upgrades. I'm testing one of those systems right now. And I got to say, actually, I think this one slides in under the minimum bar there from a performance perspective. It is a dramatic improvement. Which isn't saying much. The first one was terrible, but I think it's actually usable. So I did some performance testing on it. It's good. You know, it's fine. It's not. It's
is it as it as fast as the Go?
It's faster than the Go.
Good, because even though that's Intel, that's kind of a pain.
I think this is what they wanted to use for the Go, and I just think they had to have the design done
right
so early. Also, I don't know if you guys know about this or if we've ever talked about this, but did you know that the Surface Go was not designed by Microsoft in-house?
Whoa. They actually farmed it out. Yeah.
It was actually, they farmed it out to us. They basically said, look, we need to cost reduce the Pro, do that. That's and some other company did it for them. So
I think it's a very
Was it Pegatron? Who was it? It was like somebody Pegatron. Like that, right? Yeah. It was like one of these original design manufacturers.
You've seen the story about the magnets, right? And how there's an odd magnet configuration in the Go that looks like it's maybe intended to have two Go's attached together to form a book.
Yep. So
did you talk
let me
about
ask
that last
you,
week.
No. So what? I forget what Tim Cook said, but what did two turkeys make again? I can't remember.
Like, they don't make an eagle. What? We know that.
A refrigerator toaster.
I think there's a little too much emphasis going into this. Surface Go is the first Surface Pro type device since Surface Pro 3 to have a different keyboard cover connector. It's wider. It has more connectivity to it, possibly for extra functions. Could that mean connecting two Surface Goes together for two really slow sides of a computer? I don't know. I don't understand why you would ever do that with that computer, but it's not paper thin or anything. I mean, it's small and light. I get it, but it's not like you could hold it there in one hand with two of them, you know, in a V shape thing. So I don't quite understand that theory, but I also lost track what the heck we were talking about. Snapdragon thing. So allegedly the 8C, so where I guess the Snapdragon 850 allegedly has a 30% performance improvement over the 835. According to the benchmarks I've run, it's in the 20 to 24% range, but those benchmarks are semi-pointless because one's a store app and the other one's an emulated app and whatever. But I did run them on both 835 and 850 to come up with some math. But the Snapdragon 8CX is supposed to be like a 2X performance over its predecessor. So that could actually be meaningful. So we're going to have to wait. You know, it's going to be 9 months before we see one. But if you think about what's that event in August? I think it's in Berlin, maybe, where they announce new hardware. IFA.
IFA. Maybe? IFA. Yeah.
That is where there's only one 850 based PC out in the world so far. This is the Lenovo Yoga C630. That was announced there, I believe. But if not, it was announced around that time frame. So I think that's the logical time frame next year for Snapdragon 8CX PCs. So we'll see.
The other thing is, I don't think you said this, it runs Windows 10 Enterprise.
The
HCX, right? The HCX runs Windows 10 Enterprise.
I don't think it means that every PC that ships with this chip will ship with that. I think
it can run it because the other versions of Snapdragon could not.
Oh, really? Right? What is there in Enterprise that requires
power-wise, right? Oh, wow.
I think the right way to think of it is not so much that they couldn't, but that they didn't. In other words, the initial generations were offered to consumers. So they ran the consumer SKU, whatever. You know, the first one was Windows 10 S, and then for this one, it's Windows 10 Home and S mode for some reason.
Yeah.
I think what they're trying to say is there will be Windows 10 Enterprise-based PCs based on this platform next year.
I just thought maybe it wasn't even powerful enough because, I mean, Enterprise does have more features, and I would think more power requirements, no. But anyway, I mean, they it's, make it available, it's interesting.
But I yeah.
Well, interesting.
Yeah.
How does Chrome run on a ARM processor?
Not good.
Not good.
Not well. Did you ever try it on the HP NVX2? It was like, not so good.
So related to this news, actually, I should mention, Qualcomm is working to bring Chromium and Firefox as native ARM64 apps on Windows 10 and ARM. Now, that would be huge because those apps will run natively and they'll run great. So that's I mentioned the two big issues with Snapdragon for Windows users have been performance, which they're solving, and app compat, which is a tough one. Getting those browsers solves a big chunk of that compatibility problem right there. It doesn't help with things like Photoshop. You know, Photoshop Elements even, which is in the store, cannot run on Snapdragon-based PCs. Mm-hmm. So they've allegedly talked to Adobe. They obviously have nothing to announce along those lines. I suspect it's a little more complicated than flipping a switch in a box and recompiling. But if they could get some of that stuff, that's a big hump to get over.
This is very interesting.
Yeah. And actually, the HoloLens stuff is tied to this.
It is.
It's kind of interesting.
Because it's going to be an ARM?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Neowen reported this week that they believe the next version of HoloLens will include the Snapdragon 850 in addition to Microsoft's custom holographic processor.
That's how you improve battery life, I guess, and maybe. And weight, maybe, and size.
Well, the reason that makes sense, think about what HoloLens is, right? It's a Windows 10 platform. It's disconnected, so it's not tethered. So battery life really matters. It doesn't run desktop apps. So that problem I just mentioned doesn't matter to HoloLens. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's genius. This is exactly the right platform for HoloLens.
It is. And if it's true, it means the HoloLens is an always connected PC, which is kind of an interesting thing to think about, right?
Well, is it? I mean, it would have to have an eSIM, wouldn't it? Or
I mean, it means it could, right? That's kind of interesting if it does.
Right.
I mean, it's already a standalone computer. The HoloLens goggles are already a standalone Windows 10 computer, but I think this would make that even more kind of interesting. And
how long is it before we see one on a plane?
I know.
You know, some guys
people wear like the Gear VR and the Oculus Go on planes to watch movies, which I still think is a recipe for disaster.
I just want to alert the world right now that I fly a lot. And if I ever see someone doing that, I am going to decorate their cabin space with every bit of trash I can find.
What happened?
So that when they wake up out of their little VR coma, they can find like a tower of those mini drink cans in front of them or whatever.
Or just order him 5 drinks and have them all on the tray there when he gets out.
Yes. Right.
Wow.
I don't know. The idea of it being an always connected PC kind of fits in with Microsoft's strategy of repositioning the HoloLens as a business computer, right? Because if you look at what they're really promoting for HoloLens these days, it's all these business apps like Remote Assist and Microsoft, that 3D design one. Forget the name of that one now, but Microsoft also has said always connected PCs are the future of business devices from their standpoint. So this kind of all brings it home again that HoloLens is part of their business device strategy, even though it started out more as kind of a frivolous gaming type thing.
A frivolous gaming type thing. That was an interesting way to put it.
You know, you diss Notepad, I'm going to diss frivolous gaming stuff.
I didn't diss Notepad. I dissed Microsoft's inability to do for the rest of Windows what they're doing to Notepad.
I'm kidding, sort of.
How about Cortana? Any Cortana news? I know everybody's waiting for the big Cortana segment.
Yes.
Well, yes. This is one
we
of those.
We almost called the show like, this week in Cortana.
Yeah.
We almost did.
That close.
We almost did.
That close. Yeah.
So this is a feature that is not in Cortana yet, which a lot of people are like, it's not, but it seems to be coming soon. Cortana cannot currently distinguish between multiple voices and recognize multiple voices, but a couple of users have been tweeting over the past few days that they're starting to see these buttons pop up, one of them on a Windows 10 PC, another one on an iOS device, that makes it appear that Microsoft is about to enable this for Cortana and that you can train up to six different, it'll recognize up to six different voices and users and be able to distinguish between them. So,
jeez, yeah, it's good to keep up with 2014 there.
Alexa only got this in 2017, yes. I think. So, they're a year behind.
I'm surprised they're doing it, to be honest. Because the situations in which Cortana is actually used, someone's computer when you're signed in, or your phone, is not a multi-user environment. You know?
It's enabled for the Harman Kardon, which not many people have. But they've also, you know, in Brad's book, and we've heard too, that there could be another speaker coming, possibly from Microsoft, some kind of an ambient device that uses Cortana in an integrated way. So maybe it's setting up for that, you know, like some kind of a meeting scenario. Right. We don't know.
They did just release Surface headphones.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose speakers are not an impossibility.
So you said something I thought was it. Somebody we know has written a book.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty darn exciting. It's called Microsoft 2.0.
Hey, that's a collector's item, man. That's like over a decade old now.
Yeah, sure. Well, notice the price, 50 cents, cheap.
Yes.
So
it's amazing they're still selling it at all.
this is Mary Jo. I love it because you could tell it's Bill Gates on the front.
Yep.
The Microsoft 3.0 book is going to have a silhouette of Gates in a wheelchair.
No, this is awesome. This is awesome. Yeah. Sean is visiting us from Marina and down south and in the Monterey area. And Mary Jo Foley, writes Robert Scoble, A-list blogger, is Ms. Microsoft.
See, that totally dates this book,
yeah,
doesn't
she,
it?
Yeah, she's A-list blogger. Sure. She seems to know everyone that's going on, everyone and everything that's going on at one Microsoft. Let's see, who else do you have? Ed Bott, award-winning technology writer. When
is
I want to know what
we write one Microsoft way, isn't it O-N-E?
It is.
Oh, Robert.
Yes.
Back to the presses.
And then somebody named Mini Microsoft says Ms. Foley does a fabulous job.
Whatever happened to Mini Microsoft?
Was that a blog?
No, there was a guy, Mini Microsoft. He wrote a blog where employees could go and vent about things going on internally at the company. It was very popular, and he wrote the foreword to my book.
We call them.
And then there was a drone strike, and we never heard from him again.
No,
he's a real guy. I know who he is, but I was sworn to secrecy.
Lots of footnotes, Mary Jo. Looks like she can't write a page without footnotes.
And there was a ton of material backing it up that I put online only, and I don't think that exists anymore. Did, that archive of that.
Did Microsoft add a footnote capability to Notepad to enable this? Or how did that work?
Yes, they did.
What? No. Oh,
no. I didn't write my book in OneNote. I wrote my book in Word, as I recall.
The publisher makes you do that. That's really
annoying. Yeah.
Do you still have to do that, Paul, or have they moved on?
Well, I do self-publishing now, so the...
You can do it anything you want. You do it in
Well, the company I use actually publishes with Markdown, so I use
Markdown. Oh, nice. You write in Markdown. Wow.
Yep.
How do you do like that in Markdown, a little pull quote like that?
It's just you could use styles if you wanted to. So cool. The publisher actually has custom styles for things like that.
That's really neat.
So we have tips and secrets and whatever they... You know.
So compare this fine book... In actual hardcover form to this. This is the book we're talking about. Brad Sam's Beneath a Surface, the inside story of how Microsoft overcame a $900 million write-down to become the hero of the PC industry. Look at this.
Yeah, so looks good.
I got two copies I'm auctioning off. Actually, you know, I'll trade you, Sean. I will trade you one Brad Sam's for one Mary Jo Foley.
Wait. What's the price on the cover of that book?
50 cents?
Jeez.
Oh, he says he already has Brad's book. Damn it. Look, there he is with Clippy. That's funny.
By the way, Clippy, it doesn't smell so good in there.
What is it?
Is it?
It's a wearable Clippy suit.
Oh God! Did you put it on?
No, but Brad did. Remember, we had him on the show one time when we were at
Clippy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, man. He was stuck in there for hours.
Oh. Did he make it?
You know, it's like when Darth Vader was stuck in the TIE fighter at the end of Star Wars and he was stuck out there in space.
Forever.
Yeah, not good.
Anyway. That was at a build like 2 years ago, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So I want a picture of him so I can put him in the show. Where do we get this fine book, Beneath the Surface? At better bookstores everywhere. If you say that, then no one will ever get a copy.
It's actually not at better bookstores, but no. You can get it online.
Good. Just Google Beneath the Surface by Brad Sams.
Yeah.
And don't forget.
I think it's beneaththesurface.com, probably.
Mary Jo Foley, Microsoft 2.0, how Microsoft plans to stay relevant in the post-Gates era. Were you right, by the way, Mary Jo? Do you look back on this and say, yeah, I nailed it?
You know what's crazy? A lot of the things I have in there happened.
Yep.
So I was like, wow, that's pretty crazy. Nice. Not everything, but yeah.
Actually, I told Brad when he was working on his book, you know, he was a little concerned about the last chapter is about what's going to happen in the future. And he's like, this is going to be really dated in 6 months or a year. And I'm like, no, I said, this is going to be fascinating. It's just like Mary Jo's book. You make these predictions or you tell these insider stories about what's going to happen. And it's always interesting to go back and see how it either did happen or what might have changed or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't think that dates the book at all.
No.
I want to point out, I offered Sean $1 for it, with doubling his investment, and he still turned it down.
Wow. Sure.
And we have to say, Leo's a little low on funds thanks to a certain alcohol purchase.
Don't mention that.
It's probably as high as he can go. So.
Yeah, that's probably true. All right, Mary Jo, time to take a break because it's all about Paul for the next 3 hours. Xbox time.
Finally.
No,
it's do we have Xbox news? I don't even remember.
Yeah, Xbox Plus video games.
Usually right at the end of a month, Microsoft will come out with a blog post where they say, hey, look, we've got these 5 new games that are coming to Xbox Game Pass in the next month, you know, because they release new games to Xbox Game Pass every month. And they did that. And then December happened and they made another announcement. Then they made another announcement. And then last week they announced 5 more games. Like they just keep announcing that, like this has been kind of a bonanza month. And this is the month that, of course, PUBG has come to Xbox Game Pass as well. So just a kind of a reminder of what a great value that is, and that it just keeps getting better. And then my kids are not young enough to benefit from this particular story, but Microsoft has something called Microsoft Family, which is like their parental controls service that is up in the cloud. They have it on the Xbox, and they've enabled settings that are related to crossplay. So if you're there are certain games like Fortnite where you can play against people on other consoles or other platforms. You can enforce parental controls on those for your kids if you don't want them to see or do certain things. And actually, Fortnite is the first game that supports that functionality. I think it's available now.
Very nice.
And then finally, I've spent a few minutes playing Black Ops 4 this year.
He is Prestige 29.
No, I think I don't know where I am. Four. But this game is fascinating. This newest game is fascinating on a number of levels because it just came out in October, which is earlier than usual. It was the best-selling video game of October and already is the best-selling video game of the entire year.
Wow.
But it was semi-controversial at launch because they did not include a single-player campaign, which obviously has not held it back in the slightest. In fact, the Call of Duty single-player campaigns have been going downhill, in my opinion. And the real value to these games, I think, is in the replay. You can play multiplayer online against other people or with other people. And that's obviously been a big hit, and they've added a Battle Royale game as well. So what they just did was they announced a new version of it that is just multiplayer, meaning all the traditional multiplayer modes, plus I think it's called Blackout, the Battle Royale mode. For $30, you know, typically this game would sell for $60. So the thing you're not getting is the zombies game that's also built into this game. And if you find you want it later, you can actually upgrade it to it. So it's kind of like a cheap new way to buy the game, but it's PC only, for one thing, I should say. You can't get it on the console. But if you just want to play the multiplayer stuff, meaning traditional multiplayer plus Blackout, you can get the game now for $30. That's an incredible deal. then you should get it.
You should get
actually,
it.
Actually, you should get the whole thing.
I want to get it, except that the zombie mode is the only thing that Michael likes to play.
No, then you can't get that.
I can't get it.
Get the big one.
Got to get the big boy version.
I spend $120 to play Call of Duty every year because I buy the DLC, which is another $60.
Yeah.
But based on the amount of time I play it, I make money.
Yeah, you're actually making money playing games.
It's a side hustle for me.
Hey, kid.
Wow.
Play it for a quarter.
Just for the taunting alone.
Let's take a break. Then, believe it or not, that was not our tip or pick of the week, but that's coming up. And beer, too. But first, a word from our sponsor. This was, was this a welcome thing in the studio last few weeks. The Molecule Air Purifier. You know, we have more fires in California. The fire in Paradise just blew straight here. We couldn't breathe. The air quality was over 200 for more than 2 weeks. I would actually stay inside. And, you know, they say stay inside, but if you don't have pure air inside, and I don't understand why that would work. Fortunately, we have molecules everywhere. We have them here in the studio. We have them at home. It started actually in our bedroom. Lisa was waking up with headaches. She had never had allergies before, but when we moved to the country, I think there was a lot more dust and pollen. So we got a molecule. Molecule is the world's first molecular air purifier. It is not a filter that captures and stores pollutants. It actually destroys them. Destroys pollutants at a molecular level. This replaces 50 years of what is now really antiquated air purification technology, the HEPA filter, that was developed in the 40s. Haven't really been anything changed since. It's just a filter that traps large particles and keeps them. That's not what the molecule does. Well, it does capture, it has a filter to capture stuff, but then it also captures and eliminates, destroys allergens, mold, bacteria, viruses, airborne chemicals, the VOCs that come off of, you know, like formaldehyde that comes off carpets or VOCs that come off paint. These are pollutants 1,000 times smaller than those a HEPA filter can capture. Molecule makes it easier to cope with asthma, allergies, reduces symptoms. Lisa stopped waking up with a headache, and I know it was working because when we would travel, she'd get the headache again when we went to San Francisco. So I knew it was making a difference. That's why we got a second molecule for Michael. Our whole house now is purified, and then we got a third molecule for the studio. Did you know that mold and bacteria can actually live and grow in HEPA filters? You're making a collection. That's the problem. You're collecting pollutants. Go to the website, molecule.com, and see what the molecule does that's different. Molecule's technology was funded by the EPA. It has been extensively tested not only by people like us, but verified by third parties in university laboratories, the University of South Florida's Center for Biological Defense, the University of Minnesota's Particle Calibration Laboratory. Molecule's easy to use. It's got a clean, sleek design. It lets you know when it needs new filters. It's got a beautiful solid aluminum shell. And because of the filter subscription service, filters regularly arrive when I need them, which is really awesome. I love our molecule. It's the Apple of air purifiers. Probably shouldn't say that on a Windows show. That'll make people think the wrong thing. It is beautifully designed. It works well. You can connect it to your Wi-Fi network, control it remotely from your smartphone. I do that. They have a variety of modes. You set up the size of the room. You'll get notifications. There's actually a light, a blue light that destroys the tiny little molecules. It's really cool. But if you don't want to use the Bluetooth or Wi-Fi capabilities, you don't have to use them to operate. It's got a button right on the top that'll do everything. I happen to like it having a Wi-Fi connection. For $75 off your first order, go to molecule.com and use our promo code TWIT75. TWIT75. MOLEKULE.com. Promo code TWIT75. Take it from me. It really works. And, of course, even when there's not fires nearby, even when the air outside is fine, we keep the molecule running because
We're in a windowless office. So we need it. This solves the whole problem of sick offices and all of that. Molecule.com, promo code TWIT75 at checkout. Now, Mr. Therat, your tip of the week.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell everyone about the Microsoft Open Source Stories website, which just went up recently. It has, I think, three stories right now. They're going to add approximately 20 more, but it's basically stories from people within Microsoft who are moving products to open source.
Wow.
So they have a story about the Roslyn C Sharp compiler, the .NET Foundation, and Python. I think Mary Jo, you probably know Dimitri Lee Allen, but he is the guy.
I know Dimitri Lee Allen.
And you know, okay, so he's behind this.
He wrote a Twit app for us. He's great.
Okay. Yeah, he is. So he's the guy.
He's a listener. That's awesome.
Yeah, kind of making this happen. So really cool. Worth reading. I put each one of those into Pocket and, you know, kind of read them on my own time later.
That's so cool. Dimitri, congratulations. That's fantastic. He's a regular. He listens to your show every week.
That's the sun setting on proprietary software, by the way.
Is that what that is? I was wondering. I just thought it was a pretty picture. Paul always likes the illustrations. Really. It's the graphic designer in him.
Yeah, you got to look for the subtext. This is a kind of a bonus tip. We've talked a lot about Microsoft Edge today and the new Microsoft Edge that's coming. If you want to get involved in testing this product, and I assume this will be available across all supported Windows versions as well as Mac OS, you can join the Microsoft Edge Insider program now, right? So this will be for the standalone application version that's based on Chromium.
How would I do that, Mr. Therat?
Yeah, how would you do that? There's a link in the article, but
I probably could Bing Microsoft.
Yeah, it's Edge literally Insider. MicrosoftEdgeInsider.com
program. Oh, okay, that's easy to find.
Easy, yep.
I'm definitely want to do that.
Yep. And then Leo has alluded to this at least twice on this podcast, and it is awesome. If you're an Office 365 subscriber using Office on the Mac, you will get an update this week, today possibly, that will upgrade you to the latest version, which adds support for dark mode, which, by the way, looks awesome.
How dark is it?
It's dark, Leo. It's really dark. No, it looks very natural. So if you're used to, I prefer dark mode now. I can't not use dark mode, like on Windows or the Mac. I love it. And it's particularly good on the Mac. And this just helps Office blend in better with this new dark mode. So I think it looks great.
I actually turned off dark mode in Mojave.
How dare you?
I don't know. I was getting depressed.
Really? Oh, wow. I love it. I find it.
Do you sit in the dark when you're writing?
Well.
Okay. And it's now time, ladies and gentlemen, for the Enterprise Pick of the Week. Mary Jo Foley.
Is kind of a warning pick.
Uh-oh. Something not to do?
Something you need to be aware of if you happen to use Azure Container Service, ACS. So back in 2017, Microsoft unveiled this thing called the Azure Container Service. It was around the time container technology started getting really popular, and they wanted to make an easy way for people to access that. Then last year, they introduced something called Azure Container Service, but it was AKS instead of ACS. And what that was a dedicated Kubernetes service that Microsoft built.
Oh.
When they introduced AKS, I asked them, hey, is AKS going to supersede ACS? And they said, we don't have anything to say about that. It turns out it is. And if you're using ACS, you need to get off of that service before January 2020 because it's going away. Microsoft's just going to cease supporting it. And if you've got anything stored in there, you're going to be out of luck. So I wrote a post this week about the suggested migration paths if you're using Docker or if you're using Mesosphere on the current ACS. If you're using Kubernetes on ACS, it's kind of easy to move over to AKS. But you need to do that fairly soon since the last date of support for ACS is January 31, 2020. There you have it.
Uh-oh.
I mean, it's not surprising, but it was one of those things that was kind of like pulling teeth to get them to acknowledge this was going to happen and to get a date.
Yeah, I mean, Kubernetes is coming to DigitalOcean, so there are places you could go. But if you're an Azure person, This is an important change.
It is.
And you have a code name for us?
I do. This is a code name from the vault, as we say. Since we talked so much about Edge at the start of the show, I was thinking, you know what? Let's look back at when we first found out about Edge. The first thing I could find was an article I wrote back in 2014 where we knew Microsoft was developing a new version of a browser to go into Windows 10. We thought originally this was IE 11, like a customized version of that for Windows 10. Turned out it was Edge.
Oh, how interesting.
And I know. The original code name for Edge was Spartan.
I do remember
so
that.
So we knew that. Yeah. Yeah, we knew the code name Spartan, but we didn't know what it was. we were kind of like being, oh, what is it? It's supposed to be, I was looking at my article. It said, they want to make Spartan look and feel more like Chrome and Firefox, which is kind of ironic that we wrote that back in 2014.
Wow.
Yep. But yeah, why was it called Spartan? I'm not sure, but that I remember writing many an article talking about Spartan, and we didn't know then what the rendering engine was because Microsoft said at the time it was going to be a brand new rendering engine, nothing to do with Trident, which wasn't true. It was actually a fork of Trident, which was HTML.
Yes, I remember.
Yep. So it was like pulling teeth at like from those guys, like, come on, what is this thing you're building? And now they're kind of rebuilding it, even though it will still be called Edge in the future. It now will be Chromium.
There you have it.
Full circle.
Makes me want a beer.
Me too. So I made today's beer pick something that reflects on one of Paul's Xbox tips.
This is Paul's beer.
Speaking of Black Ops 4, there is a beer called Black Ops. It's from Brooklyn Brewing, and it's a Russian Imperial Stout. It's just called Brooklyn Black Ops. I have had this beer many times. It's delicious. It's aged in bourbon barrels. It's really potent. And it just has all the things you like in a bourbon barrel beer. Chocolatey, a little coffee, a little vanilla. So a sipping beer for the holidays, for sure. I just had the 2012 variant of that this weekend at a beer tasting. And it was even more delicious because it had been aged. But the 2018 version's out now, and it also is quite good. So if you've never tried Brooklyn Black Ops and you can find it, I would recommend you try it.
We should probably say, you know, kids, it's not okay to drink and teabag. Save that.
I've been muted.
Oh, no, you're unmuted now. I didn't want you
to. I wanted to tell Mary Jo, because she'll remember this. The early Windows 10 codenames were all Halo related. Remember, Threshold was the original version of Windows 10.
Spartan.
Spartan is the type of soldier that Master Chief was.
That's right.
I think.
Yep.
By the way, this Black Ops is 10.5%.
Yeah, it's not a light beer.
Like any good beer, yeah.
Not a light beer.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I accidentally hit your microphone.
No, it's okay.
Maybe it's because you were in the left channel.
That's it.
Do it.
Paul Thurrott, he's at Thurrott.com. His books are at leanpub.com, and you must buy the Windows 10 Field Guide right now. You've got Mary Jo Foley's Microsoft 2.0. You've got Brad Sam's Beneath the Surface. Why don't you have the Windows 10 Field Guide for
crying out? You people who have written one book are cute. I mean, congratulations, guys.
Mary Jo Foley writes at least a book a week at allaboutmicrosoft.com. And you should follow her there. That's her ZDNet blog. Each Wednesday, we convene, the three of us, at about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC, for this little thing we call Windows Weekly. A little podcast we call Windows Weekly. If you want to watch it live, you go to twit.tv/live. If you want to listen live, you can go there, too. We've got both live video and audio streams. If you do that, though, I encourage you to visit the chat room as well, irc.twit.tv. You could join the WAGs in the back of the class there, irc.twit.tv. On-demand audio and video of the show is also always available, either at our website, twit.tv/ww, or... best thing to do, subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you'll get it automatically the minute it's available. Just look for Windows Weekly. You can even ask your your Cortana or other virtual assistant to play Windows Weekly Podcast, and it'll give you the latest version. Like,
are we magic. Sure that works with Cortana?
Does
that
I don't work? Know. I've never tried it. I'm taking it as given, but I could be wrong. Does Cortana not play? It plays music, doesn't it?
Sure, it does.
Does he's being sarcastic? Back to sarcastic, Paul.
It does work with
Paul.
Spotify, so Spotify does podcasts. I suppose anything
it
is
might
possible.
Work. It's possible. Yeah. It's possible. Paul, Mary Jo, have a wonderful week. Next Thank week, you. Will we have a visitation from somebody up north?
I think we
Santa
may.
Santa Claus?
In fact. Yes.
Paul, is it going to spoil it?
Yep.
All right. So make sure you don't want to miss it. It's also kind of a special episode, episode 600.
And our last one of the year.
And the last show of the year. So, golly, if you're missing this show, that's one thing. But don't miss next week. Of course, if you're missing this show, you didn't know I even said that. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.